year for Daytona 500 win?
I mean, you'd certainly like to hope so. You know, 20 years of trying. There was another storied racer of the past that won on his 20th try, and that was a pretty big deal. And, you know, he was a former RCR driver as well. So it'd certainly be nice to win that race and do it with RCR and the number 8 zone Chevrolet. So that would be pretty cool.
Kyle, you guys have been really good on the Super Speedway since you got to RCR. How has that changed your mindset, if at all, coming preparing for the 500?
Yeah, I mean, we've had really good speed being down here. I mean, the guys build great restrictor plate program race cars. And so, you know, when we go to Daytona, Atlanta, Talladega, we feel like those places are really good for us. We've got really good speed. And it's just, you know, whether it's a I just told someone earlier, it's probably an 80% luck, 20% skill race. You know, others would disagree, but, you know, I feel like you definitely have to have a lot of the things go your way, and you got to have the stars aligned, and being able to lead off of the final pit stop is certainly going to put yourself in a really good position.
We're 10 years removed now from the accident that caused you to miss the 2015 Daytona 500. Is that something that still affects your mentality and approach in this race? And if not, when did you feel like you kind of didn't have that in your head?
I don't feel like it does anything really. I mean, you just got to go out there and race and run hard and try as best you can to make the best decisions. It's a lot of a chess match and trying to make sure that you put yourself in the right positions to get yourself up front when it matters most. And, you know, 2 years ago we led mile marker 500, but unfortunately we were coming to the yellow, you know. So been there, been right there, been close, finished second, finished third, finished fourth, all the top five spots. But, you know, there's definitely some angst over, you know, trying to win this one.
Kyle, there's saw a great improvement in the RCR campaign after the summer break last year, and then you guys added a bunch of new colleagues and personnel during the offseason. How effective do you think that will be in 2025?
Well, I mean, certainly anytime you add more people or new people, you obviously hope that it's for the betterment of your team and your organization. So I'm excited for it, you know, looking forward to it, sort of. I wouldn't say revamping, but definitely changing some personnel and some places and being able to put some better cars on the racetrack. So for myself and Austin Dillon, you know, we want to go out there and win races for RCR, for RC, ECR, and, of course, Team Chevy as well. You know, we've got some really great partners and some people there that get us to the racetrack each and every week, and you know, it's all about winning. So time is now to get that done. Yeah, I don't really. I'm not in any of those conversations, so I don't know much of any of that. I don't know what the rumor mill is of what's going on. So I'm focused on what I got to do, and that's obviously here with Chevrolet and RCR right now. So, you know, whatever happens from this day forward, I don't know. But, you know, the things with me and being here for the people that support me, like Zone and Rebel and Cheddars and everybody, to go out there and win races with them right now is my focus. He's at Auburndale. Yellow flag just came out. I don't know why, but he's leading right now. So, yeah, keep it up front, buddy. Stay. Put it in the wind.
Can you talk about his schedule for 2025? And
it's full.
How full? Like, how many times is he racing? Is he racing?
Yeah, we only have the schedule kind of planned out through May. That's about as far as we can look forward right now. But, you know, he's probably got 2 off weeks between now and May. So he's got quite a bit going on, and he's obviously excited about it. So he's running Mandalero right now. He'll run some junior sprint stuff this year, some restricted races. He'll move up into some A-class races as well, too, which is the step above restricted for the micro dirt world. And then when he turns 10, he'll be able to run some legend car races. So we're excited about that and getting him into some more stuff. Yeah, super. Well, pros you can run around 12, I think. So supers, I think you got to be 13 or 14. But yeah, that's certainly on the horizon. It'll be here before you know it. It's really important. You know, the biggest things is I always love it when we are able to start strong and have good strong starts to the year. It just kind of helps your mojo a little bit, helps you build a foundation, get you a good point start, you know, but you got to keep that momentum also. 2 years ago when I joined RCR in 2023, we had a really good first 16 races. I think we won 3 of the first 16, and then we kind of tallied off after that. So you got to keep the strength all year long. You can't blunder, fumble, whatever it is, you know, that then that's when these other guys will take advantage of you. And obviously stage points in this realm is in this era is very important. Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, Daytona, Atlanta are some really good shots for us to win races. So the first 2 weeks are good with our RCR Speedway program. And then from there, I enjoy the road course stuff. And, of course, you know, being able to get back out to Vegas. We ran strong there last year. We were probably one of the only cars that could keep up with a five car in that race. So, you know, it'd be nice to get that momentum rolling in the start of the season and really just, you know, try to run stronger each week and score those stage points and, you know, get ourselves in that, you know, running 6th to 10th each week, pick up some spots on pit road, put ourselves in better position to get good finishes. Here, you know, I think it's nice to just be able to get out there and kind of shake it down. There was a couple other guys that had some oil leaks and whatnot, so certainly they benefited from it and being able to get out on the racetrack. I don't think that's a bad thing, you know, just a short 20, 30-minute thing to be able to shake your car down at, you know, here is good for qualifying later. And then, of course, Atlanta. I feel like Atlanta is important to just kind of get a couple laps in because, you know, the balance at that place I feel like is going to change the most over the next few races because of the asphalt wearing and whatnot. So, but as you get into the races, it doesn't really matter where you start. It's just a matter of how you work through traffic.
I mentioned the angst that you carry with you about this race particularly. Is there any other race on the schedule that gives you that sort of, that you carry that with you?
All speedway races, you know, it's just, again, it's maybe Atlanta's more 50-50 of luck and skill, but also car handling. I feel like car handling and how your car races and how fast you are there at Atlanta is a big deal. We see the Fords that are really fast at the speedways, and so they certainly have that speed at Atlanta. But, you know, you go into the meat of the schedule, and that's the regular season, and that's where you have to be consistent and have to have good balance and good feel.
Ratio that you talked about, has that been fairly consistent, or was it different 5 years ago or 10 years ago?
You know, I feel like it's probably more 80-20 now than what it was. I feel like it's gotten more luck induced because we're all dealing with the same Legos, you know. So you see it sometimes when you get later in the going, back up. When you're in the middle of the race or early in the race and you're fuel mileage racing and you're saving fuel, you can run three wide and there can be three lanes and everything and you're side by side. But then when it gets down to the end and the bottom picks up and everybody's running wide open, that top lane just falls and you can't keep up there. So you've got to be in those first two lanes to make sure that you're towards the front, but trying to make a move and, you know, you're literally trying to hang somebody out. And so that's just a part of what we've got right now. And it's tough to make headway. I lost. What about it?
Well, that's my the first half. The second half is, what are you going to do to change the outcome next week?
Yeah, I mean, you got to be in position, you know. So I felt like we were pretty fast there both races last year. I had a big run down the backstretch, and I knew I needed to make it three wide, but I should have cut my speed getting into three when I was three wide, because I told myself before the race, I was like, do not be leading getting into turn three coming to the checkered. And so I messed that up, and when I saw that hole, I jumped to the middle. My momentum carried me through to the lead. And then, you know, those two cars side by side will just pull you back through the middle. So messed up on that a little bit. But all in all, just, you know, it's circumstantial. You know, you got to be right all the time.
Similarly, how
do you know the old racing rider, Ed Hatton?
Yeah.
Passed away.
Yep.
What do you remember about him? He wrote a big series about safety the couple weeks before Earnhardt died. Do you remember that?
I don't. That was kind of before my time, you know. So I remember Ed. You know, he was always here every year and down in Daytona writing stories and being a good part of our sport and reporting on it well. So I'm sure there was a few things that he wrote about me in the past that maybe I agreed or disagreed with. But I think that bodes for 100% of everybody in here, you know. But all in all, just anybody that we can have covering our sport is obviously better for us. Yeah, I mean, the only comment I'll make there is we're just trying to make it better for the teams, you know, sharing the wealth a little bit and having healthier race teams is better for the teams to then be able to go out and find drivers that have talent and not that just have the money to come up here and sponsor themselves for a ride.
Has there been
been any dialogue with him?
Has Larson made any progress convincing you to try a late sprint car at this point?
I'll try it. It's about convincing Samantha, not me. So, those things are so fast, and you know, running the micro stuff, you know, gives me a little bit of experience on that, but obviously there are much shorter tracks, and you know, you're maybe going 80, 85 miles an hour, but the sprint cars at Volusia the other night were like 140. So that's a big difference and that's a big deal. So, you know, maybe in my younger years, I would have given it a shot or probably should have given it a shot, you know, maybe Brexton will, but we'll see.
Because Lars, he told me that he thought you would be more suited to the wing sprint than the midget.
Yeah, he tells me I'm better with a wing than I am without a wing. So I don't disagree with him. You know, the aero factor and being able to find the grip and stuff like that is a big deal with all those cars. And that's what we deal with here every Sunday. Old. It means I'm getting old. No, not for me. You know, I still feel good, you know, so at least that's a positive. You know, I don't feel that old or age is just a number. So, you know, for me, it's just having these opportunities right now and knowing the experience that I have and being able to put that to work to go win races no matter how old you are, you know. So I remember Mark being one of the best guys in our sport all the way into his 50s, you know. So he was certainly really, really good and very talented. I looked up a lot to Mark and what he was able to do in his older age. But, you know, I'm closer to the end than obviously I am the beginning. So it's just going to be a matter of time. Yeah, I mean, in our own way, in our own. ...4 hours either, you know, so, I think there's same thing with Olympians, right? Like Michael Phelps, one of the most storied Olympian swimmer, is probably not going to be a very good shot putter, you know. So it's in the realm of what you are. You are definitely an athlete. You guys are probably the best world athlete reporters than anyone. So,
is there any particular strength you need or workout or element that makes you a good reporter?
Yeah, I think it's cardio, so you can figure out ways of being able to optimize your heart rate and not let it get too high, not let yourself get too amped up in situations. So cardio is a big part of it. And then the heat training, obviously. You know, when you go to places where it's cold out and, you know, it's 80-something degrees ambient, you're fine. But when you get to the hotter places with the humidity and whatnot, it can get quite taxing.
Last question. You infamously have one speeding incident on your record. What's the fastest you typically go on in interstate?
On the interstate?
Yeah.
I've got some state trooper buddies that tell you to not go over 10 over. So, I'm setting my cruise nowadays. I'm about 5 or 6. That's about it. Yeah.
Has there been any
Not really. You know, I just enjoy whenever I have the opportunity to go do something, and it's been a little bit more of the micro stuff and the dirt stuff with Brexton and what he's doing, and I ran a legend car the last couple days, and so, you know, certainly, you know, again, back to that cardio aspect, running a legend car for 25 laps straight and trying to get everything you can out of it is you know, get your breathing going a little bit and get you your heart rate going. So feel good about that, but also just working out every day and making sure that you have all of that taken care of. It's been great. You know, I enjoy it. I have a lot of fun. I wished I was able to go see him right now. He's racing right now. They're probably going to time out here in a minute because they've been going at it for a long time. They've had a lot of yellows. So, but he's been out front. And he's been doing really good. So we've been trying to work on the car to make him more comfortable, trying to work on him driving, you know, past the limit of the car a little bit, get it out of shape, keep a hold of it. And so, you know, he's doing a good job.
Everybody can see that you guys have done a remarkable job, and I'm sure you spent some time thinking about how
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. He, you know, he takes it all in. He sees what I do every Sunday. He sees the interviews and stuff that I do, and you know, the upset moments as well too. When I've got some frustrating races and stuff, and he gets frustrated, you know. So just working through all of that with him at a younger age will help him into the future. He was about ready to get past, but they wrecked behind him, so yellow's out again. But you know, he does a good job, and we obviously work with him. He's got some very corporate sponsors that are on board with him right now that have helped him along his way and through his journey, and many of those that hopefully we keep on board for the foreseeable future.
So let me get this straight before I move. You're watching.
They timed out. He won.
He won?
Yeah, he won. So good job. Yeah, no, absolutely. I wish I was there to celebrate with him, but the past 2 days I was, so that was really cool. Proud of him and Aaron and all the guys that do the work, and Samantha and Lennox, they're there. So, you know, it's obviously great to just be a part of what he's doing as much as I can.
Has there been any dialogue with Justin Haley since Bowman Gray, and where do you stand on that?
No, just kids being kids, so it is what it is. I feel like he was really the turning point of taking it more national mainstream. You know, obviously before that, Dale was very important and very instrumental in building the sport as well too. But, you know, being a North Carolinian, you know, people just kind of watched racing as, oh, there's a bunch of guys making circles. But then Jeff was able to kind of carry that to New York City and, you know, be on Letterman, be on Fallon, or be on those late night shows, and kind of bring a whole different light to what race car drivers actually are and what they do. So I feel like Jeff was a huge part of all of that, making us more mainstream.
That was a time where a lot of stars were kind of coming up. Now you're one of the big names. Do you feel like there's
I don't think so, and that's not a dig on any of the guys that are here now. That's just fact. I mean, I feel like there was really a big growth pattern through that Gordon era of the mid-90s to the early 2000s, where we became very big. We've got into a lot of national markets, new racetracks with Kansas and Chicago, you know, having the banquet up in New York, moving it to Vegas, Nashville, all that sort of stuff. And I just feel like nowadays, you know, we just don't get those many opportunities as we once did, you know. So it's probably hard for, I don't know, a guy like Alex Bowman to go rub shoulders, no dig on Alex, but a guy like Alex Bowman to go rub shoulders with Tom Brady, and, you know, but a guy like myself or Logano, you know, champions of our sport that are able to go do that sort of stuff, you know, you have a better stature that, you know, people look at you as being one of those few select champion drivers that they'll hang out with.
How do you guys maybe push it more into the mainstream with some of the real talented young guys, like a William Byron, mm-hmm. for example, or something like that? Because, like, if he were to win back-to-back, would that do something, for example?
Back-to-back 500s?
Yeah, or just would it take someone just kind of becoming dominant like Jeff was when in 10 races? Or
yeah.
I
think you still kind of have that star power of our sport, where if it was a Chase Elliott or a me or a Logano that won the 500, like, boom, that would put us more mainstreamish for, oh, man, this guy won the 500. I would like to think that arguably me or Chase would probably be the biggest story of being able to do that. Logano's won it, so he's already got that. But, you know, there's some other drivers out there that if they were to win, you know, people would be like, okay, that was the Daytona 500, what's next? You know, or arguably if it was Chase or myself, that there would be a bigger story, not through just that week of after the 500, but even for a couple months. I mean, anytime you get, you know, big name people to come to the 500, that's really special. So I remember watching the year, it was Reagan, right? Wasn't he one of the first ones that came? So that was cool. So he won, and so it's neat that you get not just the big name celebrities with, you know, doing the pre-race concert and national anthem, and The Rock was here last year, so myself and Brexton got a picture with The Rock, you know, so that was cool. Anytime we're able to bring big name people to our sport, I think shines a brighter light on it, just to how great of an event this is.
President, I think Chase was saying he used to call the winner of the 500 after. That was the kind of quote that got involved in the race. I mean, you won the race.
Look, I got to win the race, so let's get that done first.
You're talking about some of the new markets. Well, this is the first time since 96 there hasn't been a major NASCAR race in Southern California, with the exception of the COVID year. So how important is Los Angeles, Southern California to NASCAR and the fact that you're not there right now?
Yeah, I don't like that. I would much rather there be an opportunity to race out there in Southern California. That I love Fontana. Fontana was a great racetrack for me. Had a lot of success there. So, you know, it's a little, call it disappointing that we're not there, but it's not the end of the world. It's just really, really tough to have racetracks out there right now, you know. So it just seems like even the short track realm out in California seems to be struggling a little bit more and more. You know, Irwindale leaving. You still have Kern County Raceway, and you've still got Madera, and you've still got a couple of those other places. Some of the dirt tracks have been able to stay around. So we got to keep that going, you know. But a lot of places are kind of dying out just from, A, not getting enough fans in the stands during the week for the promoters to be able to keep it worth their while, and then also just the car counts. I mean, it's so expensive to race right now, and let alone cost of living these days is certainly putting a hindrance on people being able to go race. Yeah, maybe, but honestly, I mean, you want to win first, you know. Winning the race is certainly more important than an Xfinity fastest lap, but anytime you're able to do that, that helps your algorithm a little bit for the following race and being able to qualify in a better spot as well, too. So that's all important. Everything is.
So I have to ask, back in December, Samantha did a husband versus wife, and there was this Instagram with you two, and y'all were in bed. So I got to ask, do you get involved in these planning the strategies for these things, or does she just rope you? How does that work? Because, I mean, you clearly play along with it.
Yeah, I play along with it. Happy wife, happy life. So, you know, certainly it's sometimes fun, you know, and other times I'm like, what are we doing? Like, why are we doing? You know, but obviously it's just kind of neat, kind of just shows some background of our personalities and things like that and who we are.
Kind of give me an assessment looking back on it. You know, they obviously, the safety features evolved. Just your assessment on the first 3 years.
No comment. It's a different animal. It's a different beast. And for me, I would say that I haven't been able to tame it as much as I was able to the older version cars. But you know, there's definitely still some things with this car that I would like to see different. You know, I've heard of a lot more wrist injuries from drivers that we've had just from crashes and stuff like that with the rack steering. The hitting something or hitting the wall or whatever, just jerking the wheel out of your hands and hurting your wrist. I had that last year. Blaney had that last year, the year before. A couple other drivers have had that as well too. So it's, you know, it's tough, but you know, the rollover factor and the stiffness of the car and the capsule of which the driver sits in is obviously the integrity is very good.
Given what's happened post-repave and the fact that this track is still fairly very smooth and doesn't kind of have that old quality to it, has the Daytona 500 become a more difficult race to win now, considering that you don't necessarily, there isn't as much of an emphasis on setup as
Yeah, you know, those were cool races back when you could just overdrive the car and go past the tire and slide up into new positions and things like that and take chances of finding holes because there was some separation between cars. But, you know, this day and age with the fuel save and things like that happens to try to minimize your time on pit road, we're not all running as hard as we should be running, and we're not driving past the limit of the tire. So handling doesn't come into play very well until it gets later in the day, you know, the last 30 laps or so. But even still then, you know, the track is smooth enough through the turns that you don't have those big bumps like you used to in 3 and 4 out of 4. But the sketchiest part of of Daytona now is just through the tri-oval. There are some bumps down the front stretch and through the tri-oval that will kind of get you out of shape, especially if you're tight, too wide or three wide, that you've got to be mindful through the tri-oval.
You mentioned the bumps in 3 and 4. Back then, what was the biggest challenge, either physically or in the race car, of navigating that part of the racetrack and making sure that nothing bad happens?
Yeah, the biggest thing was being able to hold your line, right, and being able to put yourself or put your car in a position and redirect your car and repoint it for when you go through those bumps. If you were pointed the wrong way, you would scooch out and you would have to get out of the gas. You might get passed on the bottom or you might lose the line and kind of jumble up stuff behind you. But, you know, that those days are a little bit here. You always kind of do fight a little bit tight on the bottom of turn four. But, you know, mostly it's not as bad as what it was.
If you could have a celebrity spotter for a race.
Peyton Manning. He is probably one of the best game callers ever. So, you know, he would be able to maybe look at certain situations and be able to kind of pick up on things where other celebrity might not be able to. And I would kind of enjoy, you know, his voice in your head. Tom's not far behind. I think Peyton had better games in which he made a lot more calls himself over his coaching staff, where I feel like Tom relied on a lot of his coaching staff. But obviously you have to have instinct, and he definitely doesn't lack in that.
What the company's done to make changes, personnel-wise, crew chiefs, so on. The clash was maybe an outlier because of the track, but how optimistic are you that you've always
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're able to add new people, you hope to strengthen your organization. So with some of the new guys that are there, you know, we're looking at the things that they know and what they've done and what they've been accustomed to and trying to add that into what we felt like we were good with. There were tracks that we excelled at where it's like, okay, this is why we excelled here. There were tracks that they excelled at from their organizations that we're able to kind of look at and be like, okay, maybe that's why they excelled at those places. So hopefully that strengthens us and just brings us further up. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say the off season has any success rate on what you're going to do right now and how you're going to race. Yeah, okay. You know, it's just all about working with the people and having those better people that I just mentioned before being at RCR. And you know, we certainly don't lack under the hood with ECR and Lucas Oil and having the proper parts and pieces with that. It's just about having some better setups for Sundays and being able to chase the track conditions that are ever-changing and being able to be better set up for those. So, you know, mentally, though, of just having fun and kind of giving back to the local short tracks with Brexton and what he's doing and having some fun with all of that has been nice. You know, he just won his third race in a row this week out in, you know, a couple hours away. So it's nice to just, you know, be a part of those programs as much as I can be and watch from afar when I need to. Sure. Yes. No problem. You know, I get plenty of that. Anytime I come off the racetrack, he's going to ask me, well, why didn't you try this? Or how come you didn't do that? Or, man, this was a really good pit stop and, you know, whatever might happen. So, you know, he's always right there. He's paying good, close attention.
That's a great point. When my wife gives me advice versus my 11-year-old, I react to that advice differently.
Yeah. It's all about taking it in and processing it. Sometimes my answers aren't real quick. I got to think about it and figure out how I can relay the message either A, to the wife, or B, to a 10-year-old.